You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 168 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin
Pelton. And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
Hello!
Hello.
We are back from the Tri-Cities here to review that Water Follies action.
Oh, it's going to be out an hour and a half just on Water Follies.
Don't forget memories from 90s baseball.
That's going to be memories from 90s Water Follies.
Oh, there we go. Even better.
What if Budweiser had continued to sponsor a Hydro Flame?
Macklemore wouldn't have existed.
Spoiler alert. I don't know why you would listen to this pod if you hadn't listened to last week's pod yet. That would be weird, but spoiler alert nonetheless. All right, we got a lot to get to, so we should get right into it.
All right.
Starting with our beer from our sponsor, Tavor. Tavor is an app that offers craft beers that aren't distributed nationwide for purchase. You order the ones you like, and they'll be shipped together on a regular basis for a flat shipping cost. Going forward, we'll be drinking beer sent to us by Tavor on the pod each week, and you can take advantage too. If you sign up for an account with Tavor, get on the app and enter the code PELTONCAST in the promo section. You'll get $10 credit after spending $25 with Tavor for beers like these two that we are drinking this week. This is the first time that we are not drinking the same thing.
We are going heavy this week.
We for sure are.
Because I have a flight at 10 a.m. tomorrow. Like 5 to 6 hour flight at 10 a.m. tomorrow. So I said to myself, I need to drink a 10% alcohol beer right now.
And I have to drive you to the airport. So I said, I need to drink a 14% alcohol beer.
Oh my God. What I have over here, what I've actually been excited to try, it actually has a wax top on it. It has,
you know it's good if it's got a wax top.
This is from our good friends at Double Mountain Brewing Company, the 2015 Devil's Cuvée Creek. That is an oak barrel aged Devil's Creek Belgian style sour ale with cherries.
I cannot possibly fathom drinking that. So instead, I have from Prairie Artisan Ales the Barrel Aged Birthday Bomb, barrel aged imperial stout with coffee, cocoa nibs, vanilla bean.
Did you almost pronounce that as nibs?
No, I almost pronounced it cacao. I think it actually is cacao on this, and not cocoa. So I was correct in my original thought. Chili peppers, caramel sauce, and toffee. That's a lot of sweetness in there. This is an awesome bottle, though. It's definitely the most exciting bottle. As you know, I always say, judge a beer by its cover.
Mm-hmm. I think Double Mountain is the first brewery that we've had a beer from Tavor where we knew the brewery beforehand.
Do we know Double Mountain?
Of course we know Double Mountain.
Wait, what is Double Mountain?
They're from Oregon.
We've had them in Portland.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
This is great beer. I think they have a number of sour beers also.
Prairie Artisan Ale from Krebs, Oklahoma. I was guessing Minnesota, but we've already had, I guess, some Minnesota beer on the pod. All right, well, we've got a few toasts to get to here.
All right.
Now that you've gotten that wax seal off of there. All right, first up, to Bobby Wagner for getting an extension done that makes him the highest paid middle linebacker in NFL history in terms of annual salary at $18 million a year. Congrats.
There we go, Bobby.
Congrats to the Seahawks for getting this done. Getting Bobby Wagner in training camp.
Hoo boy.
That is wow. Powerful.
I could feel that beer go down my body.
All right. Also, we had to send out a congratulatory toast. I did the congrats toast on Instagram. We had to do this here as well. To third Pelton brother Nate Taggart and my former coworker Alicia on getting engaged over the weekend at Cochise Lake.
Well, let's just say Nate and Alicia had a big weekend. Before getting engaged, they, as you should, purchased tickets to PeltonCast Live September 6th at Belltown Yacht Club. If you do it, you will get engaged right after, you so choose.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be weird if you were already married and you got engaged after buying tickets. So it's not an automatic engagement. It's just if you want to do that. Friday, September 6th, as you mentioned, tickets are $10, with 50% of the proceeds going to the Family First Center in Renton, spearheaded by Doug Baldwin, our special guest, third Pelton brother, as you know. Ben Baldwin of The Athletic Seattle.
And tickets are going fast for this one. I meant to check the amount, but...
You forgot to do it?
Yeah, I was too busy driving children around. You understand how my life goes?
I do. I don't know if the listener knows that, but with 10 to 15 children, you can imagine.
I'm driving 3 to 5 of them at any given time, including at 4 a.m. yesterday. I went to the store at 4 a.m. It was a wild experience, but tickets...
Fred Meyer?
No, to Safeway, 24 okay. hours.
The right way to Safeway, our Safeway podcast.
No, that's our Safeway pod.
You know, I listened to Trader Bros on the drive back from the Tri-Cities with our mom.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Still holds up?
It does.
There we go.
Actually, the holiday content does not hold up because it's not Christmas anymore, as it turns out. It's July.
Again, September 6th. Tickets are going fast. There's like 13 tickets left available for this event. So go out and get them now before they're gone. This probably will sell out.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
If there are 13 more of the listener out there, you know what to expect from PeltonCast Live. Number one, come hungry.
Yeah.
Number two, expect heckling from DJ Infrared on the stage.
Of course.
Number three, surprises. Number four, special guests. Number five, potentially bingo.
Yeah. We've not talked to the famous Cousin Katie about that, but yeah, we think she's amenable.
Number six, the famous Cousin Katie. And number seven, maybe a Jan.
A live Jan?
A live Jan. I was going to say a Jan experience.
We've got some Jan takes coming up in a second here.
Oh boy, do we.
Should we get right into... So you have been unable to go to any of our search for Seattle's best sandwich locations. You've been slacking on the job, partially because we spent the weekend in Tri-Cities. So instead, we decided this week to take some time to discuss national sandwich chains.
Okay.
I would say there's a big three out there that we really need to get into.
Yes.
With all due respect to our friends at Quiznos and Potbelly, which I don't think I've ever been to.
I forgot Quiznos. Are you driving east? You see that sign for the Blimpie in North Bend? And it's like, wow, there is still a Blimpie left in the world.
Yeah, I don't know the last time I went to one of those. Anyways, those three primary places, I feel like, being Subway, of course. Mm-hmm. Our Subway spinoff pod is also called The Right Way to Subway. That's the name carries over. It's like how there's Talkin' Taco Time and potentially Talkin' Taco Bell. Jimmy John's and then Jersey Mike's.
Okay.
So let's see. I think I've had all three of these in the past 3 weeks.
Okay.
Maybe the past 2 weeks.
Should I say how long it's been since I've had them?
Yeah.
Because it's been a long time since I've had Subway.
But you're familiar with it. You've been in a time or two.
I've been to a Subway before. I know the right way to Subway.
I feel like as a kid, Subway was like an unimaginable luxury for us.
So we should start with Subway.
Yeah.
It's the classic.
The old standard.
Fruit flies? What's happening? There's smoke. God, this is summer in Seattle. And it's the worst all of a sudden. Also... to bring this back around. Also, summer of live Seattle sports podcast, August 16th at Fuel and Pioneer Square. We're going back to Toast for a second.
Yep.
Tasteful Profanity, a Beast Pod production live featuring Top Build on the Hype video ahead of the Beastie Boys. We sometimes refer to ourselves as the Beastie Boys in private.
Do we?
They didn't call us the Fabulous Pelton Brothers, just the Pelton Brothers.
It's true. We are pretty fabulous. We're going to request an edit there.
Have to say I was feeling pretty fabulous, but all right.
You were feeling pretty fabulous out there on the Columbia River.
Oh, God. There's nothing fabulous at all about that. Anyway, September 16th at Fuel and Pioneer Square. Get your tickets now. Be one of the few people, including you and the famous Cousin Katie, who attend, if you've already attended the Mina Kimes show, all three of the Seattle Sports Live podcast.
I mean, I wish it was like Burger Month at Lil Woody's and there was a hat to commemorate this. I guess the hat is just that you got the Mina Kimes hat.
There's a Mina Kimes hat?
Yeah. You didn't see the famous Cousin Katie sporting the Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny hat over the weekend?
Wait, really?
Yeah.
She was wearing a Mina Kimes hat?
Yeah.
Oh, man. God, even her internet presence is better than ours. Her merch is better than ours.
I mean, I also have the hat.
Do you?
I just didn't wear it. I was wearing a PeltonCast hat.
There we go. There it is. And look today like we might have some Tasteful Profanity merch that was teased earlier. I don't know if you saw that.
Ooh.
Anyway, okay, so Subway. Yeah. When we were kids, there was probably no greater delicacy than Subway.
There was probably some greater delicacies.
Top two places we wanted to visit as children. Number one, the Keg.
Yeah,
number two, Subway.
Yeah.
And I think,
you know, the Keg is still thriving in Canada.
Really?
It's a big deal up there.
We're going to have to make a Canadian podcast about the Keg. Going to the Keg, they had Shirley Temples. Is that what we would drink there?
I mean, yes. Well, you've got Shirley Temples, and what are the other ones?
You know, the other one.
Yeah, you know, the other one. Because there's one is Cherry Coke, and the other is just Cherry 7-Up.
Shirley Temple is Cherry 7-Up.
Uh-huh.
And what is the other one?
I don't remember.
Mrs. Fantasy Genius. No, that's ice.
It's
that's
not an
Arnold Palmer. That's iced tea and lemon. What? A cherry Coke that you would get as a kid at the Keg.
I was only allowed to do Shirley Temples with the maraschino cherry.
Maybe it is just Shirley Temple.
No, there was something else. There was another like 1950s child actor that it's named after.
All right, we'll just keep talking. I'll look this up.
Okay, don't cut any of this out.
Oh, of course not.
In true Feldenkrais fashion.
Roy Rogers.
What?
Roy Rogers.
There we go. Not a child actor, I don't think.
No.
I think he might have been a fully grown adult at the time.
One would think.
So they had, getting those drinks, I'm telling you, it was the entire, I don't remember anything else about the Keg, but getting a Roy, which was, it's a Cherry Coke. There's something.
First off, we went to the Keg as adults. Like, I remember going there during a day where we had a fantasy football matchup.
Really?
Against each other on a Monday night. I think only I was there.
You
the two of us
Mr.
were
Mr. Solo Dolo to the Keg?
I was probably going with our mom.
Are you sure you're not thinking of Black Angus?
I'm very confident of this.
The other thing was they had the salad bar right in the middle of the restaurant, right?
That's, yes.
Which when you purchase your meal, you'd go to the salad bar. And like, I did not enjoy a single item on the salad bar as a kid at the Keg, but just the novelty of it was so great, right?
Yes.
I loved going there. So there was that and the other thing.
But the Shirley Temples I think you're thinking of are more the Butcher. Is that the place? Was that the place it was called?
The Butcher. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
That was the one that was in like...
Like Soto area.
Yes.
Oh. Wow.
Whereas the Keg was in Burien that we visited. They had many locations. I don't know why we got caught up in this.
I told you. We're not talking about 90s sports, just 90s restaurants.
Oh, boy.
Such as Subway. So...
I feel offended by this.
No, I need to finish this thought.
I'm not offended by it.
You're offended by it.
What?
So that Subway is a dated restaurant?
No.
Subway is the Red Hook of restaurants.
No, I think that's fair.
But we wanted to go there so desperately. And I remember, like, if we went to a sporting event, not with our parents, because Jan was not paying for no Subway.
Yes, this is the memory I'm thinking of, too.
But we would go with, like, our Uncle Scott, right?
Yep.
Then he would stop at Subway and we'd get sandwiches
on
before the baseball game.
Yep.
And it was like, this is heaven.
This is living. You can pick anything you want and put it on here on the sandwich.
It is
amazing.
Amazing.
I feel like I first started going to Subway regularly during high school. We'd go for lunch and get like a 6-inch.
Well, so at some point when, maybe this was when you were in high school, they started having like Wednesdays or whatever, like 349 footlongs.
Mm-hmm.
And they started having incredibly cheap footlongs, and all of a sudden it seemed so accessible. And it was like, I probably went there every Wednesday calendar year 2002 when I wasn't protesting the Iraq War. Every single Wednesday that same Subway.
You were listening to Blue Scholars?
I think Blue Scholars was a little bit later.
Not that much later. They just call it the Red Square.
The Red Square. So anyway, I'd hide my Fuck Bush t-shirt and then I'd walk into the Subway for a 349 footlong.
You didn't actually have that t-shirt, did you?
I made it myself.
Oh, okay.
Or something along those lines.
Yeah, I definitely consumed a lot of Subway at UW because they had it in the hub back in the day.
And then they had like certain sandwiches, like 5 or 6 sandwiches that were $5 all the time, the $5 footlongs.
Yes.
And on that, some locations would have turkey, which is the premier Subway sandwich. And some locations wouldn't. So during college, I distinctly remember various times where I would get both a turkey footlong and a meatball marinara footlong, because you want both. And I would play a game with Katie, how many feet of sandwich are in me right now? And she never liked that game very much. And the answer was always 2.
Oh, if only the famous cousin Katie were here to recount her side of the story. Sadly, she is not. I think Subway is probably the place I have eaten more than any other restaurant in my life.
Wow.
I think it's safe to say.
Wow.
Like, I ate a lot of Subway. like it, both in college and then early in my professional career.
You think Taco Time is catching up?
I don't necessarily eat Taco Time that much more frequently than Subway now.
Okay.
I mean, the real reason I continue to go to Subway is that it's the only two like quick restaurants within a 5-minute radius of me, mm-hmm. maybe within a 10-minute radius of me, although Taco Time is a McDonald's, which just tonight, the first time I've eaten a meal there in well over a year.
Wow.
In the Subway.
At that McDonald's or any McDonald's?
Any McDonald's.
Really?
I mean, I've gone to McDonald's for like dessert, or I've taken you through the drive-thru and gotten like, you know, an order of fries or something.
Wow.
But I've actually go there for a meal.
1,000 McDonald's cheeseburgers in that time period?
Probably so. You do have 10 to 15 small children.
Well, I've had 500 McDoubles, so it's 1,000 total patties.
I mean, McDonald's is probably also up there in places I've eaten most in my life.
It has to be.
It's got to be.
I mean, it's up there with everybody. Okay, so the worst experience when you go to Subway, and I experienced this a few times as a kid growing up, is when somebody else chooses your sandwich for you. So this is the difficulty of Subway. Is there's almost too much choice. You're going through the line. And if somebody's not an experienced sandwich order,
you got to send a text. Lay out everything in the text.
I distinctly remember one time, my girlfriend in high school, her mom stopped at Subway for us and then picked us up or whatever. And the sandwich that I got was one of the worst meals I've ever had in my entire life. Wow. It stuck with me to this day. We were talking.
Was it ham?
It was ham and there was a lot of yellow mustard. And I was like, this is just an orange cheese. It is probably just the worst combination of foods, and on like a honey oat bread. And like, you just...
Can I confess
something?
You
clearly don't have taste buds if you think that all of these things go together.
Do you know what I knew I was an adult?
When?
When I started ordering the honey oat bread.
Oh, God.
I mean, I generally actually do the flatbread at this point.
Do you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Chicken teriyaki on flatbread is my go-to.
Just how can you order chicken teriyaki at Subway?
I mean... They don't offer that as a sandwich at teriyaki restaurants.
Man, would be good if they did though.
Oh, I'd go for it.
But there's almost, I feel like almost no other sandwich restaurant is as susceptible to that because they're almost pre-made. But basically every other sandwich restaurant, it's pre-made. So you can end up with
you've got less options.
Wacky baby boomer combinations of sandwiches.
Wacky baby boomer combinations.
Right?
It's so real.
I mean, there's probably nothing. I personally hate orange cheese on sandwiches.
And it just for some reason feels drier to me than the white cheese.
So disgusting. And then yellow mustard. Oh, God. It's sickening.
I don't mind the yellow mustard. It used to be mayo and mustard. Now because of the fact that I'm getting chicken teriyaki, the standby is sweet onion and ranch.
Oh, the sweet onion and ranch. So good together.
That's a good combo.
Here's the positive that I will say about Subway, though. Or I guess I want to go through the negatives first. So over time, as I started refining my palate, right, I started paying more and more attention to the foods that I was eating. And I stopped going to Subway for a long period of time, and I went back, and I was like, wow, this is really low quality here. Like, these ingredients are of an extremely low quality, in particular the meat and then the cheese. And I was just like, I don't think I can do it anymore.
I don't know, extremely low.
This does not seem to affect you at all. But I mean, I understand. Like, I'm talking about
eating. Also not ordering like every different combination on the menu. I'm just ordering the one thing pretty much.
I think there's something about seeing your food in that way also that makes it feel lower quality. Where I'm just saying I've eaten 500 McDoubles. It's not like this is high quality food that I'm eating, right?
That's only the finest ingredients for that $1.29.
It just comes already packaged very nicely. I don't have to look and think about it, right? If I saw them slapping each burger patty on there, I'd probably like it less.
Yeah.
But also, just it's iceberg lettuce-tastic at Subway. They've never heard of arugula.
Okay.
Are you're really offended by these Subway takes.
I'm not offended. I don't get it. I mean,
you actually do have a Subway podcast.
I could do a Subway podcast. I could do that. I mean, it's quick. It's relatively healthy. The downside is that it has become substantially more expensive over time.
Price-wise, it's in the same family. We'll talk about Jersey Mike's and Jimmy John's.
And it's not delivering the quality that they are.
Yes. But I will say, walking into a Subway, the smell is still incredible.
The baking bread there.
Oh my God. Like there's really nothing that compares to the smell of a Subway. And it draws you in, right? It's like the pie on the windowsill. And you're like, oh, all of a sudden I want to go to Subway. Do you agree with this, Mrs. Fantasy Genius?
I think it smells gross.
Oh, she thinks it smells gross.
Wow. So you're saying that there's...
Makes me think of Walmart.
Wow. They should maybe think about that branding-wise.
Oh, boy.
Mrs. Fantasy Genius just delivered a take that Subway made her think of Walmart.
I did not see that one coming.
Okay. So we've heard your go-to Subway sandwich.
Uh-huh.
For me, go-to, always the classic Subway sandwich, is the turkey on white. I mean, this is the blandest sandwich you could possibly imagine.
Most right? middle of the
I literally just said turkey on white. With the American cheese, right? It's like a white... What even cheese is that?
Unclear.
It's like a white cheddar or something. Like, they invented a cheese just for Subway. It's not Swiss. It's not provolone. It's just...
It's definitely not a farty.
It's Subway American. Sprinkle of iceberg lettuce. Mayo on top.
I don't mind iceberg lettuce. I'm fine with it. I like the shredded aspect of it.
Hmm. Mayo on top, honey mustard.
I get some spinach on there.
Oh, so they do have spinach.
They do have spinach.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at you, Subway, growing up.
And then olives.
You're aging. Oh, yeah, and olives too, which there's no other situation that I would accept olives on a sandwich.
I love olives on sandwiches. If I had like sliced up olives in appropriate quantity to put on my sandwiches all the time, I would go for it.
At some point, my palate changed. Because, like, when I was a kid, I was not standing. And even in these years while I was protesting the Iraq war and going to Subway every Wednesday.
Surprisingly drinkable for a 14%
beer. I know, these
beer.
Beers are actually pretty good.
Yeah. That's actually pretty good.
No, this beer is excellent. Your brain would pucker up.
The drinkability is surprising. But you want to try this before I finish it?
No, just go for it.
Okay.
But now when I go to, like, if I were to go to Subway, I'm getting a bunch of shit on there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because like banana peppers, I'm very down for. Jalapenos on a sandwich, I'm very down for. Cucumbers, I'm down for. Tomatoes, I'm down for. But at the time, I'm telling you, like that's how far back it was that I really ate Subway sandwiches, where I was just like...
Was back in your storm employee stage?
Did I go there when I was a storm employee?
No, I'm saying that when you ate like a storm employee.
When I ate like a storm employee, yes. Yeah. I'm like, give me the whitest possible sandwich you can make. No flavor.
So I can pinpoint the time that Subway got replaced in my heart.
Wow.
And that's when the Sonics, we moved from the bottom of Queen Anne Hill along Elliott Avenue downtown, a move that was generally terrible in most senses, except it, number one, it put me close to the other coast back when they had a downtown location. That was huge. And number two, there was a Jimmy John's literally right across the street from us. It was the closest single, other than like the cafe that was in the basement, restaurant to us.
Both the fastest sandwiches you could possibly get and the closest restaurant to you.
Yeah, I mean, the efficiency was unparalleled.
You must have been
having lunch.
Someone
was a relatively distant 2 blocks away.
Was that one at the convention center? I feel like, have you seen the one? It's like the most depressing Subway I've ever seen.
I have not seen
it's
that one.
It's mostly outside.
It is not at the convention center.
Oh, boy.
No. I think it was along 4th Avenue, I want to say. As was the Jimmy John's.
Well, so working at Seattle's historic Paramount Theater, there was a Jimmy John's like maybe so. 2.5 blocks away. There was also the depressing Subway at the convention center, even closer, which I literally never once went to or even considered going to. But the Jimmy John's, I would say, was a frequent favorite of mine because of what you're talking about with the, it's sort of like, it's lighter, it's probably relatively healthy. It's fast.
I don't know if I would say that. I feel like it's substantially less healthy. You're getting a lot of mayo there. Maybe not as much bread if you're only doing one sandwich. My conventional order back in the day was a solid 2. It was a flyaway. You would get like one full sandwich and a slim of another.
Wow. What, Jimmy John's?
Yeah, I had a lot of food back in the day.
Man, that's a lot of sandwich.
Yeah.
Wow, if you would have asked me how many feet of sandwiches were inside of you, I would have been off by probably a foot.
I mean, I think they're like 8 inches. I don't think they're okay. A full foot.
But it's crazy because a foot to Subway means 8 inches to Jimmy John's.
They're, I mean, they're not equivalent. I don't think that the 8 inches at Jimmy John's is quite as filling.
Really?
It's close, though.
Man, those sandwiches are filling.
They're not filling, especially if you order from the right side of the menu.
The right side of the menu?
Well, the left side of the menu is like the smaller. It's like just the turkey. And then the right side of the menu is like... So my original go-to was the turkey and ham, which I don't remember the number off the top of my head anymore. It was definitely in the teens.
Okay.
And now... Or wait, is that what I've gone to now? No, I'm a number 11.
Okay.
That may be turkey and ham. That may be...
Wow.
I may be forgetting what I used to get.
Impressive stuff here.
I just know I'm a number 11. I was able to order that by number.
But no,
when you went on Sunday before the Hydra races.
I've done the same thing too, because I typically would have done like the Turkey Tom, right? Plus a JJ BLT. So I was getting two sandwiches pretty consistently. And at one point, they just piled, it's like, it's not great bacon on the JJ BLT. And they pile it so high. And I was like, this is too much. But it's almost like Jimmy John's is like Subway done right. Right? It's like a more grown-up, evolved version of Subway. Throw in some tacky signs on the wall just to let you know that you're not at a classy establishment. And have that food come
I used to go with
instantly.
Turkey and bacon. That's what I used to go with, which is number 16. And you have to add, that does not come with cheese. You had to add cheese.
Oh, see, I never get the cheese on a Jimmy John's sandwich either.
Really?
Yeah, 16 is the Club Lulu. That's what you're talking about?
Yep.
That's excellent, though. So
I went to the 11, which is the Country Club, turkey, ham, and provolone.
There we go. But also the pre-made sandwiches, which on does Subway have this? Do they have like pre-made that you can sort of like order?
No.
It's almost a detriment to them, right?
In
and our
ways,
Lord's
yeah.
year 2019.
Well, it depends if you can order it through an app or something like that. Because, like, you know, is with the Taco Time app, the customization
but
becomes so much better if you're able to do it at your leisure.
Yes. If I had to construct the Taco Time soft taco from, like, the beginning, that would be too much work, right? If you're asking me what, if you start with
what kind of tortilla?
I want, like, the base thing, and then if I want to customize from there, that's what I want to do. But it's almost too much choice at Subway. So for this, you go in, and you can still customize however you want, right?
Right.
You can add cheese. They have a whole list of add-ons that you can have for free. And let me tell you, I am adding on.
Are you?
Oh, yeah.
I'll
tell you about my order, because it ties into the next one that we're going to go to.
I'm only subtracting tomatoes. That's all I'm doing to my
of
order.
Of course. Jesus Christ. You're still in your Storm employee phase. I'm the only one who thinks this is funny. But it's like the ingredients you can tell, they're slightly better. I'm not going to say that these are like impressive meats that we're eating at Jimmy John's, but they're slightly better.
And the bread. The bread is so good.
It's tough, man. I might take, if I had to sort of construct my perfect sandwich, I might do Subway bread with Jimmy John's inside.
Really? Because it's not as crunchy?
It's so fluffy. It's like eating air.
It's very fluffy.
And sometimes
I also don't generally eat the bread at Subway. As I've said, I get the flatbread.
Sometimes you get a Subway piece of bread that's like so gooey in the perfect way.
I the crunchiness of the French bread at Jimmy John's. Like, you could eat that just by itself as
you
bread.
You can. You can get day-old bread from them for like $1. Are you aware of the sneak?
I've heard of it. Okay. Yeah. I don't think you could do that with Subway. Like, that'd be a lot of just straight bread. I mean, maybe someone would do it. I don't know.
Day-old, it also gets very crunchy.
One would think.
Subway also is more susceptible to getting soggy. Probably the worst flavor. So the two worst things with Subway...
Because you know one thing,
having somebody else ordering it. If your Subway sandwich gets wet, you should just throw it in the ocean. Right? You were about to eat the worst food in the entire world. If your Subway sandwich
now.
Gets slightly wet, it becomes fish food.
I used to often bring Subway sandwiches to my desk in the morning. It would just keep it there until lunchtime.
Were you swimming to your desk?
No, but. It didn't necessarily hold that well. I'm
no, I think Subway, and I mean, most of these sandwiches don't necessarily preserve particularly well, but I think Subway in particular preserves very poorly. Like if you eat a Subway sandwich 3 hours after ordering it, you're getting to borderline inedible.
Didn't stop me as a 23-year-old.
I'm sure very little would have stopped you.
Oh, boy. Just like little stops you from eating like week-old Chipotle or what was it?
It sat for at least a weekend in the hot sun.
Oh, boy. Well, he's still alive to tell the tale.
I thought about that. I had a Chipotle chicken loaded griller. I was just like trying to like test myself, though. I was trying to prove something to myself. I had one that I ordered on Saturday, sat in the 100 degree weather in Tri-Cities overnight. And then all the day, Sunday, right? Again, 100 degree weather. And today I was like,
only like 90.
Should I go back for that Chipotle chicken loaded griller? Should I eat that? And I was like,
I mean, what?
No.
What would happen to your 10 to 15 children if you were to perish from that?
Just died.
You gotta be thinking more about that.
He died the way he lived, eating Taco Bell.
Eating two-day-old food.
I feel like death by Taco Bell would be like a maybe appropriate death for me.
You put that on your tombstone. It's like the Randy joke about there'd be a hand there to slap high fives.
The high five. So what I've done now, though, to Jimmy John's is they've started adding the they had the whole sheet of add-ons, right?
Uh-huh.
When you get there. And what I've done is I'll do the Club Lulu, add onions.
Okay.
Add sauce, which is their oil and vinegar, and add oregano.
The oil and vinegar doesn't do it for me. We'll talk about that with Jersey Mike's.
Hold on.
Doesn't do it for me.
And what does that make?
I don't know.
I'm trying to Mike's way up my Jimmy John's.
Okay.
Right? Because that's basically what the Mike's way at Jersey Mike's is. And I'm like, well, I can take this Jimmy John's sandwich. One of the best things, there's a lot of good things about Jersey Mike's. One of the best things about it, though, is getting the Mike's way where you get like the kind of like rich flavor. And the oregano in particular.
It's a little too much for me.
Oh, God.
I want to taste the meat.
When you can taste the meat at Jersey Mike's, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's overpowered a little bit.
Okay, so we're going to rank these at the end.
Obviously.
Okay. So Jersey Mike's.
Relative newcomer, latecomer to the scene in the Seattle area, I would say. I feel like, I don't know, it was definitely us watching football on Sundays was the first time that I had Jersey Mike's. We'd get that sometimes on a Sunday.
Do the online ordering and go pick it up.
Yeah.
And the giant bags. Pretty nice.
Yeah.
Kind of like a little bit too far of a drive from my house. We're missing the first quarter of something. Or the third quarter if you go at halftime.
Was it closer to your old house?
Slightly.
Okay. Because that's where I recall it.
It's not that close. I mean, you know where it is, right? It's right across the street from the... No, it's crossing the Great Wall Mall. It's Kitty Corner. It's in the triangle between where you're not eating at IKEA and not eating at the Great Wall Mall. You're eating Jersey Mike's.
I still want to go to that Burmese buffet. Or Nepalese, whatever that is. Nepalese buffet there.
That
I'm very
good.
Interested.
At the Great Wall Mall?
No, I think it's across the street.
You're thinking of the Jersey Mike's. It's not Nepalese.
I'm not thinking of that.
It's that's the name Jersey right in it.
I think it's on the IKEA side of the road, though.
No,
this is getting very inside baseball for Britain denizens. Kent denizens.
Jersey Mike's, though. I think as far as ingredients, no comparison between them.
I mean, they're slicing it off right there. That's high quality.
You could have the most bullshit turkey. Like, you could have the lowest quality turkey, and if they freshly slice it, I'll be like, this is excellent. Right? That's all you need is a slicer. Harkens back to Seinfeld. But the thin slices, I mean, you really understand, really it illuminates the Seinfeld episode where Kramer talks about needing thin slices, and that's why you needed the slicer. Because those thin slices of meat have so much flavor in them.
They do. And right? Especially, there's a lot of slices.
Oh, my God. Jersey Mike's, I mean, just what handfuls.
What they're making, they're lacking length. They're making up for in girth.
Girth.
There's no way not to be. And that's how dirty.
And then freshly slicing the cheese right there. The types of meats that they have. I mean, you're getting into, like, more advanced levels of meats at Jersey Mike's. You can get a capicola, right? Like different types of Italian meats that they have at no other of these.
Right here, the number 9 at Jimmy John's, capicola?
No.
No, you're not believing them? Wow.
I'm telling you, there are better meats at Jersey Mike's and more varied meats at Jersey Mike's.
Yes. You can get like a cheesesteak at Jersey Mike's, I think.
You can get anything you want at Jersey Mike's.
Yeah.
They do cook up fresh sandwiches, though, on the fryer in the back, which I don't think they don't have at either of these other locations.
I certainly do. I haven't seen a fryer at Subway anytime recently.
Right? Or it's like the flat iron grill.
Yes.
In the back at Jersey Mike's. And so they'll fry up sandwiches. pretty solid. But then to me, so it's like the meats are good, the bread is good. It's a more traditional French bread.
Mm.
You don't like the bread?
The bread is fine.
I'm so in on Jersey Mike's.
But much more in
but the meat just like really tastes like something. You don't get meat like that at a place like this that often. As somebody who was raised on Subway, having Jersey Mike's is a revelation.
Should I try the Reuben at Jersey Mike's sometime?
Absolutely, you should. I think Jan got
that.
I'm
not available
like
at all locations.
I don't know if I trust her opinion.
I know that I don't trust her opinion because she told us she did not. She was upset about Jimmy John's the other day when we went at the races because it didn't live up to the sandwich she had at the
Emerald. I want to come back to Jan in 1 second.
Oh, okay.
But so the meat has so much flavor, right? And it stands out. But then getting it Mike's way with the oil and vinegar and then the oregano on top, I'll do that plus cucumbers. It is an excellent experience.
It's not that I don't like oil and vinegar. It's that I think there's a little bit too much. Oh, maybe I can ask for it like a light version of it.
Why would you? This is Jersey Mike's. You don't do light versions of it. You want flavor there, right?
But I want a balance of flavor. Wow. I think the flavor is too dominated by the oil and vinegar.
I'm over here all alone in Flavor Town.
Oh, jeez. I don't think that's making your case for you, buddy. You and Guy Fieri are over there. I don't think that's helping.
Welcome. But so to me, I like Jimmy John's, right? Jimmy John. I don't know if I've ever had like a transcendent Jimmy John's experience, but it's always been like a very solid sandwich. It's fast. It's relatively cheap. You feel pretty good about yourself eating it.
You feel good about yourself eating then?
Comparing it to, think of the other things that I've talked about eating in this conversation.
Yeah.
We're comparing it to a 4-day-old Chipotle chicken loaded griller.
True.
But if I have all three of these options ahead of me and to rank them, it so clearly goes Jersey Mike's by far number one, then Jimmy John's, and then Subway is a pretty distant number three.
I'm going Jimmy John's number one. I'm not really sure on two and three.
I mean, clearly you're eating at Subway way more than you're eating at Jersey Mike's.
Yeah, but that is largely because of proximity. If there were a Jersey Mike's 5 minutes from my house, I would eat at Jersey Mike's all the time, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just convenience. So, I'm not sure. Because I've gone to Jersey Mike's maybe twice in the last year, maybe. Probably once.
You went within the last 3 weeks, you said.
Yeah. I went because I knew we were going to do this podcast.
Really?
Yeah.
Look at that.
I also happened to be in the area because I was going to the Ross there in Burien. picked up some very nice swim trunks, exactly what I was looking for. These was the exact pair I used to have before I lost them.
It looks like I have taste in other capacities.
Oh, boy. Oh, I love Ross.
What is your Ross podcast name?
Ross Boss?
Ross Boss. It has something to involve there. Dress for Less in some capacity.
No stress, dress for less.
I'm going to text Josh Lindgren.
He'll come up with something good.
It's only 1:50 a.m. in Minneapolis.
I think that's a signal we should move on. Talk about Seattle sports.
I want to talk about Jan really quick. Yeah. Okay, so we're at Water Follies yesterday, right? And typically we order sandwiches. So the way that it typically goes food-wise, I think we talked about this on Talkin' Taco Time last year. Right? Yeah, I think we did because Jan was talking about this amazing grocery store sandwich that it was dry as fuck, but just like piled high.
She
with
was
meat.
Upset that I didn't go there, take her there before the races on Sunday.
Safeway sandwiches. I mean, it wasn't a Safeway, technically. There's a lot of different variants.
It was a nicer place than a Safeway, in fairness.
Was it the Yolks?
Yolks,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, dude, Yolks is pretty solid. I like Yolks.
Yeah.
But
respect to Yolks.
But still, the sandwiches that these types of places make and have available in their deli,
they appeal like, to. Baby boomers?
Yes.
Or us in college.
I don't think I ever liked this.
Oh, I ate a lot of Safeway sandwiches when we were watching football back in the day in like circa 2000. This was actually after college. Circa like 2006, 2007.
But giant Subway sandwich. French bread. Hard as fuck, right?
So hard. You crack a tooth on it.
Orange, maybe white cheese. You might have gotten a Swiss in there. A lot of times orange cheese. Just stacked high with meats and a bunch of different meats all in one. Like you're getting turkey and ham, just
and roast beef.
And roast beef. No consideration for how these things taste together. And then no sauce whatsoever. maybe one small packet of Grey Poupon or something, right? And you're like, I have all of this meat and one tiny packet of sauce to try to give it any sort of like moisture. Oh my God, it's terrible. So anyway, typically the older generations will do that because they don't care about what they eat. And then
they only care about the cost.
We will go, but they care about the quantity too.
Yeah, quantity to cost ratio.
It's just like, if you can have a bunch of really shitty meat, like that's what you want, right? You don't want it to taste good even slightly. And then, so we're going to Jimmy John's, right? Freaky fast.
I mean, the fact that they were open at 10:30 and the races started at 10:30 made it not as freaky fast in your case, but
yeah. It was fine. Let me just say, we were at those boat races for a long time.
You'll never get Heat 3A and 3B back.
I saw Heat 3B.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was there for the entire... You disappeared. You were down the way. I had to shame you to get you to stand with the rest of us.
A great view.
God. So we're stopping at Jimmy John's, and I'm like, what do you want from Jimmy John's? Definitely not expecting Jan to come in with an order. And she orders turkey, Havarti, and honey mustard. Which is most decidedly not. I'm like, I think I know the Jimmy John's menu pretty well. And this is not a sandwich on the... I'm like...
Mm-hmm. I was stopping to place this order as we were walking in. Because I didn't know how quickly you were going there.
It really was incredible. And then I get to the Jimmy John's, knowing fully well that they don't have most of these things. And I'm like, do you have Havarti cheese? And she's like, the person did not even, she never heard of Havarti cheese.
Oh, no.
I would tell you, Jimmy John's does not. I'm like, do you have honey mustard? She's like, well, we've got this like Jimmy's Dijon, like a kind of like a crushed stone ground.
I think she liked
mustard.
The Jimmy's Dijon. She was happy with that.
I mean, it's good mustard.
She was offering that to our
aunt. A lot better than that yellow mustard on that Subway ham sandwich in 2002.
yellow mustard is perfectly yellow mustardy. If you had it on a hot dog, it would be great.
Yeah, not on a sandwich. So I'm just like, two-thirds of the items that Jan ordered on this sandwich do not exist.
They definitely had turkey, though.
They did definitely have turkey. But also, it's not like you can just go to a Jimmy John's and name ingredients at them. She's like, okay. I'm just listing off ingredients. And she was like, the person at the store was talking to me like I didn't know Jimmy John's, and that's what was really offensive.
Because that's tough.
I'm like, I get Jimmy John's, okay? I know how to order here, right? I'm a professional when it comes to ordering there, as I am at most fast food places. But all of a sudden, Jan has me going in there ordering tavurkey. That's what they call it.
Tavurkey?
Number 18. Turkey, Havarti, and honey mustard. And I'm just like, I'm so sorry. Blame Jan.
And then later, you accurately predicted that she was thinking of a sandwich that she had at a casino 3 years ago. And later she did tell us that this was nowhere near as good as the sandwich she could get at the Emerald Queen Casino.
In Fife.
Yep.
It's like Jan's contender for best sandwich in
Seattle.
She's
going to bring me one so that I could eat it and review it.
She actually said this. Oh, yeah. It's going to travel from Fife to your house.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to look.
We'll see how it preserves.
I mean, first off, I'm getting a pastrami. I'm getting a Reuben, not the turkey.
Oh, my God. Well, anyway, Jan's contender for best sandwich in Seattle is at the Emerald Queen Casino in Fife.
As I said previously, in our search for Seattle's best sandwich, I just haven't had enough pastrami in my life.
That's true.
Let's talk about Seattle sports, starting with the Sounders, who got a 1-0 win last Saturday in Houston against the Dynamo. The lone goal in that match coming from Jordan Morris in the 59th minute as the Sounders got full points on the road. They played without Ruy Diaz due to a concussion and Gustav Svensson due to a hamstring strain, and also saw Brad Smith leave during the first half due to injury. Nuhu with a strong start at left back. Jordan Morris slid into Ruy Diaz's striker role. Christian Roldan moved to the wing, and Danny Leyva at age 17 went the full 90.
Damn.
In central midfield.
That's pretty cool.
The Sounders perhaps strengthening their midfield rotation. A report from Deportes Copa Malaga, confirmed by Nico Moreno, indicates the Sounders are closing in on a loan for 22-year-old Malaga defensive midfielder Emmanuel Cecchini, who is definitely of Italian
heritage. We're claiming it.
Has made just two appearances for Malaga in Spain's second division and played most frequently with Banfield and his native Argentine top flight.
I knew that he was Argentinian. Okay. Yeah.
Banfield, also a very Argentinian name for a soccer club. These Sounders are currently out of international roster spots, so Cini's arrival could mean that Smith is headed back to Bournemouth after his loan, as we talked about, which is ending within days.
No one knows.
No one, I mean, no reporting.
We're
going
to have to track his airplane flying back to England. I called that this was happening.
Did you?
I think so.
Bold prediction?
I called it somewhere. Yeah. Bold prediction for 2019. Sounders are going to sign 22-year-old Malaga defensive midfielder Emmanuel Cecchini.
I'm really upset that I looked up a bold prediction that I made and was off by a technicality.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm really upset.
They needed help, not necessarily the defensive midfield, but they needed help in the middle. And I think
Nuhu
should be playing.
Yes. The thing is, they needed more, and they've got Jovan Jones at left back also.
They have an embarrassment of riches at left back.
Smith played at left mid in this game before he left due to injury with Nuhu at left back. Yeah, they've got a lot of options there. It's really more, I think, the attacking, you know, the wing positions with Victor Rodriguez's difficulty staying healthy and Harry Shipp not necessarily giving them quite the quality they're looking for that they maybe need in addition. So we'll see if there's any more newcomers to come. This presumably would use targeted allocation money, loan for the cost of the actual loan itself that would give the Sounders an option to buy at the end of the loan.
There
we
go.
The Sounders will return home this weekend on Sunday, hosting Sporting Kansas City, who comes to Seattle 10th in the Western Conference, but stronger than the record indicates. They actually rate better than the Sounders, who moved up into second this weekend with the LA Galaxy's loss by 538 Soccer Power Index.
Really?
Yeah. So still Sounders' favorite at home, but could be a more competitive matchup than it looks for second versus 10th in the MLS standings. As for Reign FC, a rough homecoming for the world players from the World Cup, as they were dominated 4-0 by the Chicago Red Stars in their return game.
Are there World Cup players in the Red Stars? Probably.
Yes. Samantha Kerr from Australia scored a goal. She had one of their four goals. She's the current Golden Ball leader in the NWSL with 11 goals. It snapped a 12-game home unbeaten streak for Reign FC in front of a sold-out crowd at Cheney Stadium.
Wow. Memorial Stadium must have been bummed.
Megan Rapinoe did not play in the game due to fatigue from the World Cup and subsequent media tour, as well as the Achilles injury that limited her during the World Cup. She hopes to return in time for the next Reign FC home game on August 7th versus the Portland Thorns. Rapinoe was in Vegas on Saturday for the WNBA All-Star Game, more on that in a second, before returning to host a press conference advocating equal pay for women along with State Senators Maria Cantwell and Patty Murray. Obviously, Rapinoe has been at the forefront of the USWNT's fight for equal pay with the USMNT, the much less successful USMNT. As for Cantwell and Murray, they're hoping to pass the Paycheck Fairness Act, which would close loopholes in the Equal Pay Act and ensure all women are paid fairly. Murray reintroduced the bill in January. It's passed the House.
All women are paid fairly in international soccer?
No, just in general.
Okay.
Yes. More generally, obviously, they're highlighting this as a specific example of the issue that they're dealing with. But it did. This is a bill that they've been trying to pass for years and years now and does not seem likely to come to a vote in a Republican-controlled Senate. That's as diplomatically as I could put it. Yes. The Reign will play Friday at Houston at 4 p.m. on ESPN News as part of the new ESPN deal for the NWSL without Rapinoe and Allie Long, who will join the USWNNT for a friendly at the Rose Bowl on Saturday against the Republic of Ireland to kick off the World Cup victory tour.
There we go. Yeah. We had to take down more international teams.
You know, bring on Ireland. Bring on Ireland.
World Cup wasn't enough.
We got Ireland.
Calling it a victory tour and everything.
All right, as for the WNBA All-Star Game, Team Asia Wilson beat Team Elena Deladon 129-126 on Saturday in Las Vegas. Natasha Howard had 14 points and 6 rebounds for the winning team as a starter. Jewel Lloyd on the losing team went 2 for 11 from the field and 2 of 9 on threes, finishing with 6 points and 3 assists. The weekend also saw Sammy Whitcomb of the Storm compete in the skills competition, where she had the lead but missed her three and lost at the end of that of her first round matchup. During All-Star Weekend, USA Basketball announced 5 training segments from November 2019 through April 2020 as part of the lead-up to next summer's Olympic Games in Tokyo. Sue Bird is among the 8 players who have committed to all 5 training windows, basically ruling them out for the international season, which Sue hasn't been playing overseas for a number of years here already, so no surprise there. Jewel Lloyd and Brianna Stewart are also, of course, on the USA roster, and Stewart told the Associated Press over the weekend that she hopes to play in the second Olympic qualifying weekend, or window rather, in February, which would be 10 months after she suffered a rupture of her right Achilles tendon in April during the EuroLeague Championship game, and potentially her first action since then. It's a big weekend for the Storm coming out of the All-Star break. On Friday, they host the Washington Mystics in a rematch of last year's WNBA Finals. Storm celebrating championship night, also honoring the Seawolves, the Sonics, and the Seahawks at Angel of the Winds Arena in Everett, where the Storm will play their next 2 home games.
Are you going to this? Are you going to be?
No, I'm taking care of your 10 to 15
children.
So you're
not able to go? Wow.
I'm missing it for them. Before traveling to face the LA Sparks, who are percentage points ahead of the Storm in battle for 4th in the WNBA standings. UW football fall practice starts this Friday.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's coming.
Oh, man.
The Huskies this weekend got a commitment from 3-star cornerback James Smith from St. John Bosco in the Bay Area. He's the 15th commit in the 2020 class. If I know anything about the UW secondary coaching, he's going to be a second-round pick in the NFL draft in 2024.
I'm fired up. fired up for when the end of the first day, we think that the Seahawks might draft him, trade into that first spot in the second round to get him, and then they don't.
It's not going
to
happen.
He'll be a very good Arizona Cardinal.
He'll definitely play in the NFC West.
No matter what, he'll 100%. Be in the NFC West. The takes are coming.
The Husky football takes are coming?
Oh, man, they're coming.
Jacob Eason cakes are coming?
I mean, this is going to be a year of... The takes are going to be hot.
Are they?
Well, just with regards to Jacob Eason, like, do people have feelings about him?
I mean, when we were doing the QB tiers conversation last week with Mike Sando, I was thinking about how much Jacob Eason fits exactly what NFL scouts are looking for.
Mike Sando will be on this podcast in 2 years waxing poetic about Jacob Eason's body, his arm strength, the pickup that he gets. You could run any offense with Jacob Eason at quarterback, whether you go 6-10 or not.
Oh boy. Well,
the takes are coming, I'm telling you. It's going to be, I mean, so the Huskies, did we mention this at Media Day? Was this last week?
Yeah, we mentioned it.
Okay.
Way to pay attention to the podcast. Yeah, we talked about this.
Yeah, we talked about it. It was here where I heard it. It was from
okay,
you.
Yeah. Like most of your Seattle sports news, you got it from me on the podcast.
It's going to be a very fascinating season, though. I mean, when we kick this off, it'll be...
It'll still be August.
Very interesting. As we begin training camp, though, this is the first training camp that we're going into without Jake Browning.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what feels like a decade.
Fortunately, we have so many Jakes still there to comfort
us. Don't worry. There's a lot of Jakes. But definitely a bit of a transition year for the Huskies. I'm fascinated to see how it goes. I mean, I think we can expect to hear reports out of practice starting on Friday that the defense is ahead of the offense.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure.
We're going to be hearing about a lot of interceptions, and I think that we're going to be hearing about young star players in the secondary a lot more than we're going to be hearing about offense.
Just a former Storm dance trooper, Kyler Gordon.
There we go.
Yeah. Apparently the first 5 days of practice, I don't know if they're practicing all 5 days, but media is allowed to discuss those. After August 6th, they are not allowed to discuss them.
Okay.
Leading up to the opener.
Not allowed to discuss them.
August 31st against a team that I do not remember off the top of my head.
August 31st?
Yep.
I'm going to guess Montana.
It's always good to just speculate wildly on the podcast.
There's no way we can find this information.
I know it's not Cal because they're playing them in
Eastern. It goes Eastern and then Cal.
And then Hawaii.
Yep. Yeah, this is us reading the Husky schedule.
Yeah, and at BYU. Seahawks training camp in full swing, and now including Bobby Wagner after he did not practice the first 2 days while wrapping up that 3-year, $54 million extension. Takes.
This is great.
I mean, we knew it was happening. Like, there was never really any doubt that Bobby Wagner was getting an extension. But yes, it is great. And it's also notable that he becomes basically the first Seahawks defender to... I mean, Michael Bennett... Did Cam Chancellor get a third contract? Yeah, I guess he did get a third contract.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, he had to fight tooth and nail for the third contract.
That was his holdout.
Yes.
Which was much more protected.
But of Seahawks' homegrown defenders, he's the first player to get it easily.
Yes.
Right? I don't know. They didn't want to give it to Cam Chancellor. And, like, honestly, in hindsight, probably regret the deal.
I don't know. They did not want to give it. They didn't want to give it to him 2 years ahead of time. That was why he held out, actually. It wasn't going into the last year of his deal. I think the Cam extension made them a little more gun-shy when it came to going forward.
With Earl.
We didn't talk about Earl Thomas explaining that his middle finger was, believe it or not, directed at Pete Carroll.
Wow, had no idea.
Here is my take. I have no take. Let's everybody just all move on at this point. I'm bummed that Earl Thomas is not a Seahawk, but I don't care what he thinks about Pete Carroll.
Earl Thomas is great. That's it. Earl Thomas is and always will be great. These are any opinion that you have that could be negative about Earl Thomas, you're not going to have in 10 years.
If that opinion isn't retire that jersey.
Yeah.
I mean, actually don't retire that jersey because we shouldn't retire any jerseys, but put him in the Ring of Honor.
When Earl Thomas is going to the Hall of Fame, we're not going to be talking about his time as a Raven.
It might be a little... I wouldn't rule
it's
that
a cliff
out.
Note, right? It's Jerry Rice on the Seahawks.
It's not Jerry Rice. That's offensive to Earl Thomas to say that. It's Jerry Rice. In worst case scenario, is Jerry Rice on the Raiders.
I'm just saying this is like...
Jerry Rice on the Seahawks was actively bad.
Just... If you're hating on Earl Thomas right now, you're playing yourself. I don't even know if people actually are. I haven't actually seen the people doing it. I've only seen people complaining about it.
Right.
I'm sure that there are people doing it.
I think there are people in Bob Condotta's mentions doing it. Sure. I've muted most of them.
Sure. They're all Russian trolls. Bobby Wagner's different, though.
I think some of them are real. You know who the Seahawks did bring back?
Wait, no. We should talk about Bobby Wagner. Why Bobby Wagner?
Well, I mean, he doesn't have kind of the wear and tear that Earl Thomas did in terms of injury history.
I mean, he's missed games.
He's missed games, but not the severe injuries that Earl Thomas has had.
And I think 2 seasons ago was it where he was felt pretty injured for most of the year.
But I think they see him as the quarterback of the defense, rightly or wrongly.
It's tough because, I mean, when I watch Bobby Wagner play.
And look, when you've been able to replace Earl Thomas with someone like Tedrick Thompson.
They just had a replacement out there. Well, it is kind of interesting because, I mean, maybe not at middle linebacker, but the linebacking core is more solid overall, probably. I mean, we heard Mike Sando last week say that it's probably deeper than we've seen it in quite a long time.
Yeah, I mean, Cody Barton playing well in practice thus far. He stepped into a starting position during practice on Monday with Michael Kendrick sitting out with a minor injury.
I mean, you have three linebackers that you consider, as far as basically any position group on the defense, linebacker is the one we feel most confident in.
For sure.
Secondary, we don't feel confident about basically anything there.
I don't really feel confident about anything at defensive line either.
Well, yeah, that too.
Through the first 6 weeks of the season, at least.
And we were, I mean, it's not going to change things that much. And
it's going to change things pretty substantially when Jaron Reed returns, but.
It's going to be bad. It's going to be maybe really bad, and then it'll be bad. This defense is going to be bad. Bobby Wagner can only do so much. At the same time, Bobby Wagner, there's an outside chance that he's not in his prime. There's an outside chance that he's maybe the best defender in the NFL.
I mean, Aaron Donald's pretty good, that guy.
He is pretty disruptive. But Bobby Wagner is a very important defensive player.
Bobby Wagner does his role as well as any NFL defender, I would say that.
Do you think...
I just don't know if his role is as important as Aaron Donald's role.
Do you think part of it is that the Seahawks felt very confident in their ability to develop secondary players where they maybe don't as far as linebackers?
Yeah, I mean, the track record since Sherman has left is...
It's not about whether it's real, it's about a feeling.
Yeah, I think that is a factor in it. But I think the injuries were probably a bigger factor.
Okay. But anyway, it's great to see Bobby here. I mean, there's a very good chance he'll retire as a Seahawk. He's up there with one of the best defenders in Seahawks history.
Yeah. So this past week saw the return of Deshaun Shedd, who's coming back apparently to play safety, where Leno Hill, now going by Leno.
And I was going to say, is this a new player?
It's not a new player. It's still Delano Hill, but
I'm like, we've either got a typo or they signed somebody else whose name is very similar to Delano Hill.
It's new to you.
Like a, yeah. I hadn't seen it, so it's
like a CW sitcom during the summer.
Oh, that was NBC.
He's expected to be out at least a couple of more weeks due to the hip injury that ended his 2018 season. Per Pete Carroll, he's still on the PUP list. So here back comes Deshaun Shedd, who has plenty of experience in the Seahawks secondary.
Great.
Yeah. No complaints there.
Yep.
People are very hyped about DK Metcalf.
People are appropriately hyped about DK Metcalf.
People are overhyped about DK Metcalf.
I'm so fascinated to see what it's like once we get to preseason. Because when we've been hyped about things, let me just say as a fan base.
Oh, yeah. Like everyone remembers the Troymaine Pope era.
Oh, Troymaine Pope would have been good.
I mean, probably because all running backs are equally effective.
I mean, that's the thing.
Which is, that's my version of running backs don't matter, is all running backs are equally effective.
Troymaine Pope, given an opportunity, probably would have turned out to be a pretty competent NFL running back.
Sure, because all running backs are equally effective.
Yeah, but we were very hyped on Russell Wilson his rookie year.
I mean, yes.
We were hyped on Russell Wilson the minute he was drafted.
We were also so hyped on the guy, Chris Matthews.
Were we that high down to Chris Matthews?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, we were going into that next season. We were very hyped at him, and he lasted like 3 weeks.
He played well in the Super Bowl. He'd shown it. It didn't
That still didn't translate. That's a greater thing, and it didn't translate. It didn't
feel the same as DK Metcalf, though.
Oh, boy. I mean, look, I think DK Metcalf is eventually going to be a good NFL player, but rookie receivers, the track record is what it is, and what it is bad.
I mean, that's the only question that I have is basically...
That's the only question you have is the fact that all players, the group of players that includes him has historically been bad?
Yes. We have decades of history about rookie wide receivers. But and then we have DK Metcalf.
We have some great stories coming out of new reports coming out of training camp. I'm weighing these. I don't know. It's tough to say which is more important.
Even when DK Metcalf isn't playing awesome, he's going to be awesome, though.
I think that keeping expectations for low for DK Metcalf is ultimately beneficial to DK Metcalf, so people don't turn on him.
He'll pass like three times a game, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. He's going to set up the run. The threat of DK Metcalf will set up the run, as Zach Whitman tweeted.
And I think it was Ben who tweeted that.
I think it was a reply to Ben, but I could be wrong. On I'll go back to
crunch
my...
Crunch the numbers.
I'll go back crunch to my tweet here. About I'm just saying. Hope is a bad thing, maybe the worst thing, and no bad thing ever dies.
It feels like when we've been really hyped on a player, they've ended up being a pretty good player, right?
Well, what about the Kaysen Williams preseason?
Okay, Kaysen Williams also would be a monster player had he not been cut.
Sure.
But this is different. You can feel that it's different, right? We weren't hyped about Kaysen Williams coming out of practice. He had some very good preseason games. We were pretty hyped about... DK Metcalf is different.
Zach originally had the thought that these training ramp reports on Metcalf are an amazing way of setting up the run. We won't even need to waste time on passing during the season. And then Ben replied with his comment that from the Ringer podcast that defenses won't want to play single high looks against DK and Lockett, and therefore the Seahawks want to run against two high safety looks. So the Seahawks drafted DK Metcalf in order to run the ball more.
It's true. The thing that makes me nervous about DK Metcalf is what the Seahawks could really use is sort of a possession type receiver. Do you agree about this?
Yeah.
And that's really what they don't have. I mean, they've got Will Disley.
Come on, John Ursua. Let's go.
Come on. We're relying on a couple of rookie wide receivers.
Gary Jennings. Who's the undrafted rookie who's in this mix?
He's going to be a monster.
Of course he is. I mean, it is true. The one, like the most effective rookie receiver in Seahawks history was an undrafted rookie. And that young man, his name was Doug Baldwin.
Oh, I thought it was Jermaine Kearse.
No, Jermaine Kearse was not good.
But it's notable the names that you hear coming out of training camp. These things matter. Do you disagree with this? The names that we're hearing Cody Barton a lot, right?
If we have a correlation between names you hear a lot early in training camp and regular season performance, it's like 0.15.
I don't think that's right.
Terry Wright is the undrafted rookie that they're talking about. And Keenan Reynolds, the other player competing.
It's going to be huge. Let me just ask, have you heard the name LJ Collier one time out of training camp?
Yeah, there was some discussion about him today.
Was there?
Yeah, in one-on-one drills.
He did good.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Oh, that's all I need.
Today was the first day. It's okay, well, now you're in.
Hearing his name.
Great.
We've heard a lot about DK. We've heard a lot about Cody Barton. Aside from that, not a ton.
Yeah.
I do think that these things matter. They don't matter a lot, but they matter a little.
Yeah, they matter a very small amount. Like about 3%.
All right, fine.
Anything else on the Seahawks?
You have no other thoughts on Cody Barton?
Or is it time to talk Seafair?
Oh, yeah. There's another sea in town.
There is. For one weekend, Seattle sports, we're a hydro town. We're a Blue Angels town,
just
actually.
Just in your heart.
So we were there on the shores of the Columbia River on Sunday.
Were we?
Some of us were there for all of the races.
Were we ever?
Sunday.
How about that?
So we can preview what's going on at Seafair. So the top two boats on the H1 Unlimited circuit, the U6 Miss Home Street Bank, driven by Jimmy Shane, and the U1 Jones Racing, I believe it's Les Schwab Tires this weekend,
there we
the
go.
Sponsor, with Andrew Tate. Those two drivers have combined to win the last three Albert Lee Cups. Notably, in all three cases, the winner on the water was penalized, and the boat that finished second actually won the race. It was like so exciting on Sunday that we had a race where the boat that was leading the whole time actually was the winner. What are the odds? So the last driver to win besides those two was J. Michael Kelly in the U12 Graham Trucking back in 2015, and he came up with the win on Sunday in the Tri-Cities at the Columbia Cup. It was an upset. So here's what's happened. So last year, Andrew Tate, in presumably the Les Schwab, won the High Points Championship. This was a surprise because the Home Street Bank team, dating back to when it was the Oberto previously as their sponsor, and Steve David was the driver.
Why
back
is Oberto
in the day.
Not sponsoring that same boat?
They're not willing to pay enough to sponsor for the full season.
So they're sponsoring in the Northwest.
They're actually sponsoring the backup boat, the old Home Street Bank boat that they raced through last year in the Tri-Cities. And then after that race where they lost and basically it eliminated them from the High Points chase, they decided to break out their new boat and start getting that ready for the 2019 season. And they have completely dominated the 2019 season with that new boat so far. In terms of the High Point standings, the Home Street has
5,950
points.
I just want to say that.
It's on.
I just want to say Luca was telling me all that about the Home Street boat and the Alberta boat and the changing boat sponsorship. And that was the same boat, but that nobody ever died in that boat. He was very, very big on that. And I thought it was like complete bullshit and he was just rambling, but apparently.
No, he was right. He was dead on.
You know where he heard it.
You definitely know.
Oh my
know.
God, being at the boat race is like being, it's like being with a young Kevin Pelton.
He's listening
like
to
prattling
a human.
On the drive home, do you know how many questions about hydroplanes he asked me? No. Where I was like, I don't know. I'm like, the amount that I pay attention to hydroplanes extends to the 3 hours that we were just there. Nay, the 7 hours that we were just there.
You need to let him come to Seafair with me on Sunday.
He wants to.
I know he wants to.
Do you want to take him? He's going to hate it.
He may hate it.
I told him he was too young. I said he could make that decision for himself when he's older. You can't leave Seafair. You're stranded there.
All right, where was I?
Oh, God. It's just too much.
Okay, so they broke in the new boat, and they've been dominating this season. 5,950 points to the second place is the Graham Trucking with 4,539 points, more than a quarter less.
Wow.
So this is partially because Andrew Tate, the Les Schwab boat, they missed one of the races due to not having a sponsor. So they're way behind in the High Points chase.
The Pelton cast was just sitting there.
It's true. I don't know if we can afford it. So last weekend in the Tri-Cities, Jimmy Shane, a perfect weekend, wins qualifying, wins all four of the heat races, including two of them against Andrew Tate.
Looked very dominant.
Completely dominant. Yeah. Win one from the outside in one of these races against the Graham Trucking. But in the final, so the key to hydroplane racing, like the entire race happens before the start, the clock hits zero at the start.
Love the sport.
Literally the entire race. It's over then. You don't have to pay attention after that. You only have to pay attention before the start of the race. So the
sounds like the NBA now.
The current Oberto boat.
All you have to do is pay attention June through July.
Not this year. The current Oberto boat, driven by Jeff Bernard, he loves to get the inside lane. He's in lane one. J. Michael Kelly and the Graham Truckee is in lane two.
Doesn't everybody love to get the inside lane?
But some people are like more aggressive about it than others, especially because so the way it works to get the inside lane, generally it means that you have to be going kind of slow and you tend to be behind at the start.
Okay.
So you're sacrificing lane position for speed at the start. So lane two is the Graham Truckee with J. Michael Kelly. Lane three is the Les Schwab with Andrew Tate. At that point, running is the Delta Real Track.
You could probably just call it the Les Schwab.
In lane four is Jimmy Shane in the home straight, but he's behind at the start. He missed his timing marks. The timing marks are everything in hydroplane racing. And so they get down to the first turn, and those other three boats are ahead of him, and Jimmy Shane has nowhere to go, basically. Like he runs out of room and is way behind at the start. And at that point, the race is over for Jimmy Shane. After one turn of the first lap of five.
You think the race was over for him there?
Oh, I told Luca that. It was too far. I probably told you. You were also standing next to me.
He'll be telling his children that in 15 years. Wait, hopefully more than that.
If he's having children in 15 years, something has gone very wrong.
He'll be telling his children that in 20 years when he's standing at the Columbia River.
So basically the race at this point.
But you don't think he had the kind of boat speed? We've seen this happen with boats coming from the outside.
He was too far behind.
And just chipping away.
And the issue he had was that there were not just the two top boats in front of him. There were two other boats in front of him.
He just had nowhere to go.
And it took him five laps to pass those other two boats and finally get third on the last lap.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was rough water out there. So it was basically a two-boat race at this point. The Graham Truckee now has the inside lane against Andrew Tate and Les Schwab, which was on the outside, and just outran him. It was an impressive effort by what's really the third best boat in terms of like speed and quality. But J. Michael Kelly drove basically a perfect race and got the victory. So it was an exciting final at the Columbia Cup.
So going back to this week, do you think that's sort of like a template that was set? Or do you think we'll see at Seafair a week later, Jimmy Shane fighting for a better lane?
Yeah, I think he'll be more aggressive based on the results. I mean, also, he could have won from lane four if he had been there at the start and had boat speed. You can't both be behind at the start and on the outside. You can be one of the two. You can't be both, if you have the fastest boat.
If he was, why wasn't he there? He
missed his marks.
Fucked it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what makes boat racing exciting, even though it's not exciting for like four laps of the five lap race.
It was a thrilling 30 second.
But that moment at the start, shit can happen.
So you think we will see him be a little bit more aggressive to try to get inside position, especially in the final in Seattle?
Probably. Now, so one interesting difference between the Seafair course and the Tri-Cities course, the Tri-Cities course is 2.5 miles, so you have longer straightaways. And the Seafair course is more about being able to handle the turns because it's only 2 miles and it's a little rougher water on Lake Washington.
Who does that benefit?
Columbia. I mean, the fact is the home straight is probably better at all of those things.
I thought the faster boat benefits from having longer straightaways.
Generally, yes. So inside lane becomes a little more important at Lake Washington. Historically, like back in the day in the 90s, you didn't fight for lanes the way that you do now. You got to pick your lane based on your points. And often the team with first choice would pick lane two and not the inside lane because that was seen as kind of the easier way to win. On Lake Washington, you'd never pick lane two. You'd always want lane one.
Why is it seen?
Just because
Is there a chance if you're in lane one that you sort of get like washed out by the other boats?
Yeah, you get pinched
taking his turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I mean, it didn't really happen to the Oberto. They just weren't running that fast all weekend, but you know, even having the inside lane wasn't that big of an advantage for the Oberto in the final heat.
Do we feel like it's sad having Oberto not have a very good boat?
I mean, historically, for most of their history, Oberto hasn't had a very good boat.
I know, but it's the most prominent sponsor at this point.
It is. But give some respect to Home Street Bank. You're going to see them on like every commercial during the Seahawks broadcast during the preseason.
I've never been inside of a Home Street Bank.
Yeah, me neither. But they're like a prominent presence in my life.
All right.
So hopefully this will end before 6 o'clock like it did last weekend, last year at Seafair.
It ended because they had to rerun the final race?
Yeah, there was a flip in the final, which almost never happens anymore.
I remember that being mildly thrilling.
It was thrilling before the hour that we had to sit there waiting for them to actually rerun the race.
What about the piston boat? So right as I got there in the Tri-Cities, it sort of sputtered out. You said that its propeller broke. Then you drew a diagram of what a propeller was to me.
You didn't know that a propeller drove a hydroplane. They lost a blade from the propeller. The blade flew up and went through one of the uprights. And then also when the propeller then...
So it's just at the bottom of the Columbia River now?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
The propeller becomes unstable and it came off and it sliced off the shaft alongside
my Subway sandwich.
No, it's there alongside your swim trunks and my glasses.
That too. The Columbia River's taken a lot from us.
But not my sandals this year. I thought it was going to get them, but it didn't get them.
Oh, there we go. Will it be back on Sunday?
It was not planning to run at Seafair either way because it didn't have sponsorship, but it was forced to withdraw. And another boat that had a gearbox issue was forced to withdraw from Seafair. So they're down to 8 boats this weekend.
Which was that?
That's the U440, which is not a competitive boat.
And nobody cares.
I mean, it's a disappointment in terms of number because now if a boat, you know, goes out due to mechanical troubles during the weekend, all of a sudden you're down to like 3 boat heats, which is, so this will probably tie the second smallest fleet in Seafair history, or tie the smallest fleet in Seafair history. A couple years ago, there was an 8 boat field, but that's about as small as it gets for Seafair, which is usually the premier hydroplane racing event because so many of these teams, as we've talked about in the past, it's as if like half the NBA teams were based in
Seattle.
It's
like a crossover.
Yes.
This is really disappointing news for the city of Burien.
Well, the city of Burien still has its hydroplane that's locally owned.
All right, there.
That's the U11. I forget who's sponsoring them at this point. J&D Plumbing? I think J&D Plumbing.
So again, to watch out for this week, Jimmy Shane, still the fastest boat.
Still the favorite.
Fastest boat, better around the turns. The presumptive favorite.
Yes.
Going into every race.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that what happened last weekend changes my opinion. They're the favorites. Andrew Tate and Les Schwab, second. And then J. Michael Kelly is the third boat that realistically can win.
And did win this last week.
Yeah, I don't think that any of the other boats, even if they get good position, unless a bunch of other drivers make mistakes, the other boats can't win.
So you did me no favors on the drive home by every year going into the final, you write out all the boats that are in the final race.
I do.
And put them on a piece of paper and put them in a hat, a Pelton Cast hat, no less.
Yes.
To draw, everybody draws out, well, mostly the children at this point.
Yes.
Are drawing out whatever boat will represent them in the final heat.
The tradition since our childhood.
And Luca Giddy, who led that in the child? I feel like it was still you. You were like 8.
I don't specifically remember.
There was some adult who must have started it, right?
It was probably our Uncle Bob.
It had to be passed from Bob to you, now to Luca.
Yeah.
Good God, it's just it's cross-generational. And cross-family, too. We're spreading like 3 different families here.
It's not direct descent.
It's gone from Carcino to Pelton back to Carcino.
last weekend, you weren't at Carcino, though, at the hotel.
Oh, God.
You were finally back to a fabulous Pelton.
Being Tristan Pelton really made me uncomfortable. Him having the boat that won, though. Like 3 hours into the drive home, he was like, what do I win for winning this? And I'm like, you win fucking pride, dog. What do you win for anything? Speaking of which, we should go back and talk about this in the beginning. We should add a mention to the fantasy football league.
Can we do it next week?
I think we should get it started now. Because we're going to have to draft in like 3 weeks.
We're an hour and 18 minutes into this podcast.
It'll take 30 seconds.
But the editing will not take 30 seconds.
All right.
So to hit us at peltoncast@gmail.com if you have listened to all of that.
If you've gotten here and still want to play fantasy football.
A lot of Seafair analysis.
Godspeed to you if you're here. Oh boy.
And if not, we'll talk to you next week.
Just wait until there's the bonus content after this.
on that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.